from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the to this week's show. We're going to cover a number of topics, but first I would like to just hear from my friend here, Ryan, who has now, this is now your second trip that you've taken in 2 weeks, right?
I know.
How do you feel? You traveled out, bro?
I'm really traveled out, actually, yeah. I was down in Boston this past weekend, and we didn't even do anything, but just the amount of, like, going around and spending, like, 6 or 7 hours each way going anywhere, if you're lucky, is...
Yeah, that was the shorter version, because last week... You had an odyssey where, what was the longest time it took from sort of like your departure to your arrival?
I left Thursday 9 a.m. and I arrived Friday at 7 a.m.
Oh.
So it was 22 hours.
Wow.
Yeah.
And that was in a bus, right?
That was in a bus.
Was it just one bus or do you have to transfer to a bunch of different ones?
It was like four.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
What about the border? This is really my question. I didn't ask you this last time, but I wanted to just get your input. Now that Obama's in sort of power, has sort of like the border sort of cooled down, or are they still a bit like kind of hotshots?
Oh, they're still bastards. It's like we were there for a while clearing the bus, and while we were there, they had some kind of red alert where all these red lights went on, and all of the doors, you could hear the doors locking. Wow. And then there was like 20 agents that ran out of the office across the way to some car. And I'm sure the car was just like, I don't know, maybe the guy...
It smelled like weed.
Who
red
knows?
Alert.
Yeah, who knows? But they flipped out. So, I mean, I don't see anything cooling down there.
Well, I wanted to segue that into sort of... a discussion. I put.
Oh,
this
was this all
site.
A ploy? Was this a ploy to set something up?
Maybe.
Very. I was kind of wondering. I'm like, this is very strange.
This
I feel
is
like
the
I'm
nature of segues.
I feel like I'm being interviewed.
Okay. Well, the reason I wanted to bring it up is because I wrote an article just on Friday about this one kid called Derek Kopp, who was shot in the chest by police officers that broke into his dorm room on a drug raid.
I heard about this, yeah.
I think, first of all, his last name, C-O-P-P, is a little bit, you know, ironic.
It's always hilariously ironic.
It's like, you got shot, cop, you got shot by a cop.
I know. If this was New York or they were in Montreal and they had the Journal de Montréal, the cover would be, cop was shot by cop.
Yeah,
it's just like classy,
like
classy, classy.
It is very classy. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about, because the story itself is a bit of a... I mean, it's not a long story, so we're not going to deal with it, but we're going to deal with a different subject. Basically, what I was trying to say in the article is that this type of behavior that you see from sort of like police officers that are going in, having drug raids, shooting people during these drug raids, what I was saying is that we're going to see a lot more of that.
Yeah.
And the reason I'm speculating is that because in any economic crisis where all of a sudden police budgets are being slashed and simultaneously attitudes about drug enforcement are starting to be laxed, a lot of these guys are figuring to themselves, well, the only way to save my job is to get a drug bust. So what do? They break into a dorm of a 20-year-old hippie kid. You know, well, what were they hoping to find? Less than an ounce? But obviously, you know, it ties back into what was going on shortly after Michael Phelps got caught with a bong. You know, all of a sudden everybody went nuts and the sheriff started arresting everybody that was at the party saying, like, well, you smoked, so you're going to go in jail. Well, you can't convict someone based on that. But it was only a display that the fact is these guys are afraid that they're going to lose a significant portion of their income from, you know, no longer being able to have drug enforcement.
You're saying the big angle on this is the fact that the sheriffs and all of these people are basically setting up these drug busts for no other reason than to try and prove that they need to be kept on, that their jobs need to be saved?
Well, it's always been like that to some degree, because you'll always see, like, once in a while, I mean, it's not often, but once in a while, a big drug raid. We see it all the time over here, you know, a bunch of Hell's Angels get arrested, they find a bunch of marijuana, a couple ecstasy pills. I mean, it never seems to be more than that. You ever notice? Like, when's the last time they did a huge drug bust for serious, deadly drugs? No, they're always ecstasy and marijuana, you know? It's like the two least lethal, you know, illegal drugs seem to be the ones that they're always raiding. I'm not going to start going conspiracy theorist on you, but I'm just saying, in terms of the in terms of a drug bust, it's pretty weak.
Yeah.
Because the stuff's everywhere. I mean, like, we could walk outside. I'm sure one of these houses is probably a pot farm.
We already know that the people across the street are drug dealers.
Well, we're about 90% sure. I mean, they could just be socialites.
Yeah, they could just be drug hoodlums, in which case they just do a lot of drugs.
Yeah, that would be, you know, fine and acceptable in this neighborhood.
It's fine and acceptable when they shut their mouths at 3 a.m. when they're outside. When they don't do that, it is no longer acceptable. And then I call the cops on them. Those people are doing drugs. It's like, they don't care if they're making noises. I'm like, they're out there doing drugs. But, you know, it's interesting to me that you find that's the interesting angle on it, because to me it's as old as, you know, cops trying to hit their quota at the end of the month for speeding tickets and stuff. For me, the big issue with this whole situation is the fact that these cops are going in there, guns blazing, shooting people. It's happening all the time. These no-knock raids are the most ridiculous thing ever. Number one, because I can't believe that these cops are... If you're gonna raid, like, a crack house, like, full of some hardcore motherfuckers, then, yeah, do a day raid,
SWAT,
bring the guns and everything.
No knocking, every tear gas.
But here's the deal. For all of these issues, like, I mentioned last week about how they no-knocked a guy and a cop got shot because the guy thought he was being robbed.
Yeah.
Why are... And this is just some rent, like, some average guy who has a crappy job at an office building. He lives alone, and he's a loner loser. So it's like, why are these cops...
Well, now he's in jail.
Why are these guys not waiting for this guy to just walk from his front door to his car and then be like, walk him, excuse me, you're under arrest, and that's it. It blows my mind that such a dangerous form of apprehension for these people are being used, because it heightens the chance that the people that are being raided are going to be killed, and it heightens the chance that cops are going to get hurt. And I don't like either. I love cops. I love people. I don't want either of them to get hurt.
Let's not mess with each other if we don't need to. I think the big problem has a lot to do with the perception of how raids should be, because if you're going to have a drug raid, you need to have it be flashy. If you just knock over, sort of like, say, like, come into the car and we're not going to have a scene, and even if there were to be drugs there, I mean, it's not that exciting.
But who cares? I mean, it's insane that this is...
I know, but I'm trying to take this perspective that, in general, the war on drugs is not... Because you don't win it, you need to do the same thing that they used to do back in the old days in Vietnam, where they thought that it was a good idea to show body counts. Hmm. And that reason was because it gave the perception that they were winning, despite the fact that they were obviously losing. But it backfired on them, obviously, because people were like, this is grisly. We don't want to see that shit. A similar thing is happening right now with law enforcement in regards to how they handle the war on drugs, because they want the perception to be of a fucking cowboy breaking down doors a la Jack Bauer and putting away these scumbags forever. You know, that's the tragedy of the entire picture, because it's nothing like what it really is in real life. You know, it's not some scumbag dealer they're breaking into. It's just some fucking poor hippie, probably trying to pay his shitty rent, who grows a plant or two, or some guy who doesn't even do drugs, but he just acts in such a weird way that everybody all automatically assumes, well, he must have a pot farm or something like that in that house. It's really big, and he's single. Why else would he spend his entire day there? He must have a growth operation or something. Mm. When really, he has like 20 computers, you know, and it's emitting enough heat that they think it's like a grow farm. Who knows? But my point is that basically I see a very tragic element here, that this kind of thing is going to increase, specifically because in our economic climate, you know, the reality of prohibition becomes, you know, frightening, because you're like, we can no longer afford the war on drugs, but there's always going to be those individuals that tell you, yeah, we do, and if we let them win, society is fucking over. So they have a very cowboy attitude towards prohibitionism.
So you were mentioning earlier today how when Obama repealed the whole stem cell thing, no one said anything because it's no longer it's no longer politically sane to jump on these bandwagons, because no one cares about them, you know? If you're taking time away from dealing with the economy, you're all dead. Do you think that the same kind of thing is going to happen with drug prohibition and the war on drugs? That all of a sudden people are going to be saying, what is the point where everybody says the $1 trillion that goes to the Defense Department, the amazing amounts of money that go towards the war on drugs, the amazing amount, and that includes everything from All the cops that you need to enforce it, all of the expenses for prosecuting, all of the money you have to spend keeping these people in jail, all of the lives ruined because all of a sudden they have a criminal thing on their record and they can't even get a job at McDonald's.
It's a powder keg situation. What we're witness to, I think, is 8 years of policies based on fear. Right? I mean, you can justify $1 trillion if you think that somebody's going to be dropping a nuke on you or that your enemies are going to come over and crush you. Mm. But I think one of the interesting things about the economic crisis and we're seeing is that there are such repercussions around the world that people realize that you can't do war like you used to do war. The world is too small. If you were to sort of like declare war, the United States was suddenly at a serious war with a contender, you know, like say with China, like... Mm. The fact is these two countries are so dependent on one another that they would go broke immediately. Like, you can no longer have this attitude of saying, well, we have a protectionist economy, we don't export, we develop our own resources, grow our own food. Only in this circumstances is war feasible. Mm-hmm. When you have kind of like a pluralistic world, essentially, where everybody's so intertwined, the economy of one means the economy of all. So it's a lot more difficult once that becomes visible to suddenly use the same fear mechanism. It's why I think a lot of right now the modern mythos is that of the, you know, terrorist, the one who has no affiliation to countries, who's an independent, corrupt individual that is seeking to destroy society. It's such a, you know, it's a mythical figure, really. Mm. But it makes sense because, in a way, a nation can't be an enemy anymore because there's such integrated trade partners that you wouldn't even think about it. I mean, would you think about France going to war with Britain? Like, that doesn't even enter your mind anymore. But, hell, less than 60 or 70 years ago, you might be, maybe, I could kind of see, you know, maybe France wants to come back and, you know, maybe Britain's thinking we need to expand. Imperialism, you know, like that was its nature. I mean, it, to some degree, that has dissipated as we've become closer as a community. But I wanted to go back to what you said because this was my segue. Mm-hmm. I wanted to talk about an op-ed piece that I saw in New York Times that was talking about how
Is the Times the good one? Okay, the
New York Times is good.
Good Times is good. Post is bad.
I think anytime it says Post, it's a piece of shit. But I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, it's kind of like the Sun everywhere else.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I think the Washington Post is conservative, but I'm not 100% sure. But every time it's something says Post, I don't trust it.
Yeah,
you know, it's like even here, the National Post is a conservative magazine in Canada. It's like you don't read that trash. That's garbage. That's like, you know, that's written by Albertans in Ontario. Anyways, back to the segue that I wanted to talk about. Yeah, op-ed piece in New York Times that was really interesting and basically dealt with the fact that the conservative movement, just as you said before, is losing momentum because it's relied mostly on, I mean, almost entirely on Republicans to sort of push forward its agendas. No to gay marriage, stem cell research, abortion issues. But the problem is that was a luxury that no one can afford at this state. Like, you cannot have long discussions about Terry Schiavo, you know, when there's an economic crisis about the worst since the Great Depression. I mean, we're not talking about the 1980s level recession, okay? This is 1929 level of fucking recession. This is a bitch slap down.
This isn't even the post 9/11 recession.
That
was nothing.
Tech bubble bursting.
I know.
We had an entire bubble, the financial bubble burst. That was one, that was like just a tiny, tiny little pinprick. This is a fucking massive deflation. Mm. And what's happening is that this is really interesting, and I think that conservatives and evangelicals in particular are going to notice that, you know, the Republican Party was on their side very, you know, provisionally. As long as it sort of like allowed them to have a voice and a significant demographic on their side, they'll always go where the money is. And the money is always, was at least until now, in the evangelicals. I mean, highly organized, deep pockets. I mean, they're perfect. They're the kind of people that'll keep paying your bills. But the problem now is that who's paying whose bills now? Like, you're seriously in trouble. And if you dare talk about these issues, it just seems as though you're not taking the economy seriously. Like, that's how important it is. I mean,
in a strange kind of way, this whole economic collapse is really good for atheism.
Yay! Yeah. Well, actually, you know, you're not wrong. Because the thing is, it's opening up a lot of new dialogue. You know, it's opening up the dialogue about prohibition, what we just talked before, where all these very serious newspapers are saying the same thing. we need to think about legalizing marijuana, or at least decriminalizing it. And that's something that I didn't think I was going to read in an American newspaper, in a major mainstream newspaper, in a long time. But all of a sudden, boom, economic collapse, and everybody's looking at the old model and thinking, wow, in 1933, when they eliminated prohibition, that same year, they noticed that it was the end, the beginning of the end of the Great Depression. I mean, everybody tells you it's the war that kickstarted. It's not true at all. Past 1933 and well into 1936, the economy had already recuperated. Mm. You know, now they were just making a shitload more money selling weapons to freaking Europe.
Oops.
Rather than, like, that's, you know, that's that was their trade, and became the trade for Americans for a while until now. Fuck.
Yeah.
I mean, think about that. But that's what I find interesting. Like, just that that new economic model is all of a sudden bitch slapped the conservatives, like both in their fiscal policies and their fucking social policies, and just brought them down. So finally, we can start hearing what everybody else is saying. It's like a real good opportunity to hear a lot of interesting thought, in my opinion.
I don't know. I honestly think that it's kind of going in a different way where. Obviously you have the conservative fakers that were just kind of in it, because if you're going to look at right wing, and I don't want to kind of lump them all into one, but these are the people that kind of went where the money is, and they sold their allegiance to these right wing hardcore Christians. And you could say, yeah, now they can't afford to do this, but all of a sudden you've got this whole new, even crate. There's another group that has gone even further down. Look at Chuck Norris.
Chuck Norris
is talking about having a violent revolt against America and seceding from the Union and running for president of Texas.
So, you know what it reminds me of? And this is sad. Wild, Wild West. Like, I was watching that the other day because there's literally nothing on TV.
Oh, that is a lie. That is an absolute lie.
No, not on our TV, at my girlfriend's TV. She only gets, like, two channels.
Oh, okay.
It was on APTN, which is sort of like, natives television. I'm like, what are you doing showing Wild, Wild West? Like, there was even a phrase that he said. He's like, oh, how did you learn how to... survive. I was raised by a bunch of Indians, and I'm thinking to myself, this is an APTN, and they didn't even redub that. Like, they should have redubbed it. It's like, I was raised by a bunch of natives. They don't like Indians. But meanwhile, they show movies that depict them as very silly.
It's hilarious silly. That the Aborigine Network is pretty much the only channel she gets. That's like the most useless channel ever.
And it's on a 13-inch television. It's so painful. Anyways, but I was watching that, and the entire time, the main villain, I couldn't help thinking it would have been much better recast as Chuck Norris.
Mm.
Because Chuck Norris is loveless. He wants to secede from the Union. He's very bitter. But you know what I thought is really hilarious about this? We mentioned this before. We talked about this. That when times go bad, you really get to see who the true Americans are. Where the right-wing guys are like, that's it! You know, Democrats are in power. We're out of here. We're seceding. I'm like, you motherfuckers. You accused everybody else of being a bad American. And then when times get fucking tough and you don't get your way, you want to split? Oh, my God. There you have it. That's exactly what they're like. If they had that chance, if they could do it, they'd do it. They would sell you out in an instant. You think they believe in plurality? Do you think they believe in cultural relativism? They fight against it. Meanwhile, America's founding principles are based on that. They hate those principles. That's why they think that the founding fathers were Christian, which they were not. Like, they have a very different vision of what America is. I've often said, and I believe it, that there are two distinct Americas in people's minds. You know, like, we just see it as a landmass, but it is an attitude. You know, it's an attitude that on one side I agree wholeheartedly with, you know, with the people that are along the border, people that are similar to me, that have liberal attitudes. I'm like, yeah, these are great. And then, you know, so you see these pockets of craziness. And you're like, what the hell is wrong with your population? And the truth is, well, two very different mindsets that since the Civil War have been fighting one another. Like, you think they were fully integrated? You think the Civil War fixed everything? No, they were two different nations. They really were. And yet they tried to sort of like amalgamate, and it's still a very big mess over there. It's a big fucking mess.
And that's why I'm kind of saying, with this whole economic collapse and the Democrats being completely in power, it just seems like there's a lot of scary stuff going on. And while the general mainstream attitude might be, hey, don't worry about anything, everything's going well. In the background, we got a whole bunch of Timothy McVeighs and a whole bunch of these other groups that are starting to look into blowing shit up.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and this is why I don't think that they're going to be as big a problem as you think. It's just basically because there's still an overwhelming attitude that people believe in America itself. Yeah. And Americans are like, America! I mean, we've seen it. We just don't understand that level of patriotism.
Yeah.
Now, there are some that kind of view that very different from other people, but I would say that they're a small percentage of people. And I think that as soon as they commit any acts that are different from whatever other people expect from citizens, they're like, whoa, dude, that is it. You're done. You're cut off. I mean, it's not like Timothy McVeigh got much sympathy from anybody.
Yeah, pretty much after that happened, everybody freaked out, and we stamped that whole situation down.
I mean, think about those standing militias that are in towns. I mean, on one side, you got a bunch of gun nuts that love dressing up in camouflage, but otherwise, when push comes to shove, they'd lay their arms down and, you know, take whatever punishment comes their way. That's their way. But then you have the other group that's like, fuck that. If the cops try to come here or the army tries to come here, I'll kill them. And everybody knows those are the guys that you should be fucking afraid of. Hmm. All right? Even when they're not like that and the media tells you that they're like that, they fear them. It's like Waco.
Yeah.
Right? Everybody's like, well, these guys were nuts. They were firing at the ATF trying to kill them. No, they were defending themselves. The ATF had opened fire doing exactly what they did to that Derek cop guy, thinking they were going around being cowboys, kicking down doors and shooting through them, and then wondering why people fire back. It's like, as soon as you have weapons in a population, you know, you shouldn't be acting like cowboys. Only the guys with guns can act like cowboys. As soon as somebody else does, as soon as their enemy does have a weapon too, I mean, that fucking changes everything. I mean, even when they don't have weapons, they still overreact. I mean, you think that college kid had a gun on him?
No, he didn't.
No, he did not have a fucking
gun. He got shot after he moved his hand to cover his eyes because they were shining a gigantic flashlight into his face. And when he moved his hand to cover his eyes, that was a mistake.
did you ever read that book, Blink? It talks about these four guys, these four cops that shot this black immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
He was actually from, I think, Africa or something like that. And it was a huge story back then because they shot him something like 50 times. And what he tried to do is he tried to give them his wallet, which had his identification papers, and they shot him thinking he was pulling a weapon.
Yeah.
Now, the thing that was messed up about that story is that the cops were driving around. There were four of them that weren't in uniform. They weren't in a marked car. They were just driving around, and they noticed him acting in a way that was strange. So then they made a mental note of that, and then sort of like a couple hours later when they passed again, they noticed that he was again acting strange, so they wanted to find out what was going on. He wasn't acting strange, though. He was just standing on the balcony looking out. But they thought that that was really unusual because they had no way to understand what he was trying to do. And they already had this this precept when they went to confront him. This guy is a drug dealer. He's trying to pull something. So they couldn't understand, like they weren't able to understand that he was afraid when they sort of like confronted him, that he was reacting like a person who thought he was being assaulted by four dudes that jump out of a car. They forgot for a second that they weren't in police uniform, that they had not identified themselves properly. They were just four dudes pointing a gun at someone who was just trying to give him his wallet because he thought he was being robbed. And they panicked and they shot him, and they thought they could have sworn, each one of them, that that wallet was a gun. That was how deep that delusion was. They saw a gun in his hand. They wanted to have the opportunity to shoot him because they had this, their preconceived notions that this guy's a drug dealer, this guy's a bad guy, this guy's evil, he's corrupting kids or whatever. And that was it. That's all they needed to do to shoot the man 50 fucking times. Well, add to the fact that, you know, the first shot that went off and everybody just unloaded. I mean, literally unloaded. Unloaded a full clip, reloaded, and unloaded that clip again. All right? So, well, I think one guy fired 35 shots. That's 2.5 clips.
I wouldn't try and take any kind of gigantic policy against anybody for that. That was just a really messed up case, and the people involved were despicable.
Well, he's just talking about the fact that they were found not guilty, actually.
Oh, that's lovely.
As most cops usually are, because the very process to, you know, to investigate them internally is still cops you know, investigating cops. What the fuck do you think is going to happen? There's no outside perspective there. But the reason that they were let go is that because they, although they overreacted, basically the thought was, well, they had responded to a situation that was unusual, and the person did try to reach for their fucking, you know, pockets to pull something out, and they panicked. But the problem really was the fact that it was entirely their mindset that was to blame. You know, they did not do a good job. And how many cops out there don't put themselves in the mind frame of the people that they're arresting, that they just see them as a potential attacker? You know, there are lots of cops out there who are afraid of people. Meanwhile, they give them badges and give them a fucking gun. What do you think is going to happen? They're scared, but they don't want anybody to know they're scared because they have to be tough. Then they sort of like have a, I don't know, very vigilante attitude about, you know, drug offenders or criminals and think, oh, these are all bad people and they need to be shed. Like, this cowboy-like attitude is not something you need in any law enforcement individual because they possess an uncanny amount of power. Like, we are allowing these people to have the ability to incarcerate, you know, any one of us.
To kill us.
Yeah. They can walk around with guns. Like, that's a tremendous amount of fucking power. And they can use them if they feel it's necessary. So I really think the bigger problem is the caliber of individuals that we're allowing as cops. Like, if your IQ is too high, you cannot be a cop in certain places. Like, you will be refused. They don't want anybody that's really that smart. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? It should be the best of us that fucking protect us. Not the worst, not the dumbs. It's like, oh, great, he's 250 pounds and he's got no brain. All right, well, I guess he can subdue me pretty good. That's good news. Yeah, I'm sure he's going to react really appropriately and all. In all circumstances. Okay, there was one more thing I wanted to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
This is actually kind of funny. You're going to get a kick out of this. This is, you know, the game of life, right? Remember that?
You mean the board game with the spinny thing?
Yeah, the spinny thing. Anyways.
And the cars, and you got married, and you had kids, and then sometimes you get that dreaded card that would say, your kids are dead.
Really? I never got the kids are dead one.
Yeah, it's pretty.
What kind of depressing one did you have?
I don't know. It was like family emergency. Kill your kids are dead.
I don't think we played the right one.
I seem to remember there being a your kids or your wife or like you're now a widower.
I think, okay. I can believe the wife thing, but the kids thing, that's pretty gruesome. Anyways, there's an online version of it that you can play.
Yeah.
And conservatives are going crazy because in the online version, you can have same-sex marriages.
Yes.
And the WorldNet Daily, which is this very, very, very conservative site, ran a piece about it. And they had this one quote. I think it was just really quite hilarious, and I'd like to read it to you. It's basically what one mother was saying. She says, you know how kids are. My daughter noticed right away, even before I did, and clicked on one of the girls instead of one of the men, and then asked, Mom, how come I can marry a woman? And that led to a lot more questions that, quite frankly, I was not ready to talk to my six-year-old about. Now, when I read that, I thought to myself, well, it's not really that big of a deal in terms of a conversation. Well, you know, they're just, you know, same-sex people get married. If they ask why, well, you know, some people are homosexual, so on and so forth. But that's my perspective. That's how I'd explain it.
Yeah.
I would just say two people that are in love and want to commit to each other can marry. Doesn't matter the sex. Point final. Conversation done. But for a conservative, you have to tell them why gay people go to hell, why, you know, God has chosen to forsake these people. All this really crazy shit.
Yeah, this woman obviously doesn't get it, because obviously in video games you can kill people too. It's like, hey mommy, why can I shoot this person? This person dies. That's a much more difficult conversation to have with your kid than why are you allowed to pick this other person. You could just be like, oh, I guess it's a bug. I mean, how fanatically impotent do you have to be to not be able to totally hoodwink your kid on such an easy...
He's a six-year-old. It's stupid.
I know. Why can't a woman marry a woman? It's because it's a cheap web game, you dumb kid. Or, I mean, you could do the whole, oh, people do that and it's evil. And it's the same thing as saying, well, you know, people shoot people and it's evil. Not that I'm saying that gay people are evil. I'm just saying that this conservative person is so weak that they would spend more energy arguing about this being horrific than spending 2 seconds diffusing the situation with their kid, blocking the website if that's how they are, and just moving on with life.
I don't know. I think though that when a question like that arises in a 6-year-old, if you don't have that facile answer of just saying it's a bug, it's going to just keep showing up again and again and again. And this is a conversation that I think all conservatives want to avoid, specifically because of the implications. Like, if I'm a kid and my parents have told me my entire life, God is just, God is good, and then all of a sudden the complicated, like the shores of reality start hitting with that image.
The shades of gray.
The shades of gray, where you're saying, well, okay, well, if God is all good, then why is he going to send these people? They look like they're nice people. Why would they go to hell? Well, they're going to go to hell because they're homosexuals. Okay, well, why is that wrong? But doesn't God create everybody that way? You know, like the kinds of questions that it must bring would just drive somebody fucking crazy. Because the honest truth is that no conservative can answer that with, like, adequately. It
says in the Bible that homos are bad. Yeah, it's not that difficult.
Yeah, but you're not, again, you're looking at it from the perspective of a kid who's already been told 100 times that you just have to listen to the Bible. But these are the kids that go, why? That's usually why I said it's easier to explain it to them after they've already masturbated. Because then if you tell them that masturbation is a sin, or that they are sinful in general, then they can understand that and they won't ask any questions.
Basically, it's part of the whole sinful sex thing, and this is just more sinful than the other stuff?
Exactly. I mean, it's once you're dealing with sexuality and you want to say, this sexuality is wrong and this one's right, then that is something that's like pretty complicated for kids to understand, because a same-sex marriage isn't even about sex.
Well,
it has nothing to do with it. It's marriage.
Well, you know what that mother needs to do to her daughter then?
No. What were you going to say? Molester? Is that what you were going to say?
Masturbator.
That is just plain evil. That is just plain evil. Okay, with that, let's wrap things up.
Yeah, let's just leave the show on that. Sorry, everybody. We'll see you again never if that was a bit too salty.